Okay.
So we'll start, is that okay?
Just want to do it so that your hands are more visible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think Surya Namaskar could be a little bit people know Surya Namaskar very well.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we'll just do one round and then 30 seconds of Shavasana afterwards. Okay, you can begin at your own pace. Okay. Check the camera. Okay, so so today we're going to cover from this book. Right, lessons 21 and 22. Starts off the discussion of the brain. again, anatomy, physiology, endocrine system, nervous system. More details about the chakras. Again, we've gone over the main points from my point of view. Again, just more details. For those interested, this book in 21, they do Manipura Chakra. So we did Manipura Chakra last month. All right. Again, there's similar practices. Again, shorter than what's in there. That one is more complete. Asanas. Sirasana. So that's the headstand. Okay. So has anyone ever done a headstand before?
When I was young.
When you were young?
Yeah.
Same here. Oh, you've done it when you were young too?
But mostly near the wall.
Oh, near the wall. Yeah. Okay.
On my own, it was difficult to connect.
Yeah. So so the main thing with doing a headstand is to, you know, to have no fear of falling. Right? So the way to get have no fear of falling is to actually practice falling. So once you practice, if you practice falling, you know, and you realize that, okay, I can fall without getting hurt, then the headstand is actually very easy to do. Without any fear of falling, you can do a headstand very easily. So the first thing you do, again, so the way I fall out of a headstand, so when you, if you fall this way where your feet are, you can put your feet down and land okay. And see, the problem is if you fall the other way, and you can like land flat on your back and like hurt yourself quite badly, right?
Yeah.
You know, especially if you panic, you twist your neck, and all kinds of things can happen. People have injured themselves, you know, quite a lot trying to do a headstand. But basically, again, it talks about it in this book as well. You know, you kind of let your, when you start to fall, you kind of have to let your body go completely loose and relaxed, right? Don't stiffen it. If you stiffen it, that's when you hurt yourself actually, and you panic. So it says, like, fall like a sack of potatoes, right? So when you do that, you kind of, like, do a somersault, essentially, right? You kind of, if you're falling backwards, you just kind of fall, you'll roll on your shoulders and you'll somersault out of it. I'll demonstrate, actually, so you can see what that looks like. But that's basically the way to easily come out of a headstand without hurting yourself at all, right? To fall out of it, essentially. So the first step in doing that is to just practice doing a somersault, right? Everyone did a somersault? Long time ago, I guess, eh? Well, you can watch. You can watch. I'll demonstrate. You want to see if they... Okay. Okay. Something like that. Okay. So, okay, I'll be going from here to there.
Yeah.
Okay, so somersault, again, it's pretty simple. You just, again, it's the first exercise that all the kids learn, right? You just put your head down, right? And you just kind of go over that, right? Nice and simple, nice and easy. Again, if you're comfortable doing that, you'll be able to do the, you know, come out of a headstand if you fall out of a headstand pretty easily. So the next thing, the first step of the headstand in this lesson is to just... You know, try to balance your head a bit. Don't try to put your feet up straight, but just try to tuck them in next to your body, right? So I'll just demonstrate that first practice step, and actually, and then I'll fall a somersault out of it, right? So you can see from that position how you could fall and easily come out of it without hurting yourself, right? So that's just like, so what you do is you you interlock your fingers, right? You place your hands on the ground, make a triangle kind of thing with your hands, right? You're going to support yourself with your forearms, right? Your weight is supported with your forearms and your hands and on your head as well, right? You place your head and you cup it on the support of your back of your head with your... Actually, let me tuck my shirt, it's going to fall out. Okay, so interlock your fingers, make your hands in a triangle, put your head on the ground. You don't want your glasses getting in the way or anything like that, so you can take them off. Okay? And then you come up on your toes. You walk your toes towards your body. And you just bring yourself up like that. And try to balance your head like that. Okay? And again, if you fall, You just have to go into a somersault, right? And it's easy. So there's no... So you can't, you know, you just have to understand that it's impossible to hurt yourself, right? You know? So, so that's all that's there for this lesson, right? So you should be comfortable doing that, at least. Just balancing with your feet tucked in, right? Meditation, they talk about, are you guys giving it a try?
Yeah.
No? Be careful, right? No?
No, I've done it for a long time, and seems difficult doing it than I was thinking it would be.
Yeah. Well, again, you need to, like...
Another thing is that it's not on the forehead you're trying to do it.
Yeah,
you're
no.
just doing it on flat, on the...
Well, you can't... So the middle, you shouldn't rest on the middle of your head, right?
Yeah.
Either slightly on the front... Or slightly on the back.
Yeah, that's right. Slight on the,
okay, I go with slightly on the back.
Yeah, that's right. What I saw. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a leg slightly in front.
Uh-huh.
It's not.
You can also do it from there. You can also do it from here, right? You can also do it from.
But
like,
not in the middle.
No, the middle is a soft, kind of a soft spot right there. Yeah. So either the a little bit back or a little bit front.
I remember when I used to do it, I used to do it a little bit in front.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, whatever you find comfortable.
Try it then.
Yeah. So the meditation practice they give is Ajapa Japa. So this book devotes five lessons to Ajapa Japa. And we'll be covering it today as well in the meditation part of the class. Basically, it's the main practice for awakening the Anahata Chakra, which we're going to be doing this month. Anyways, I'll get to it in when we get to the other book. And that was it for lesson 21.
What are the advantages of doing Shirsasana.
Headstand?
Headstand, yeah.
Well, again, you drain, all the blood drains out of the feet, and you get the brain actually gets soaked with blood, right? So it really, like, cleans and energizes and, like, you know, they say it increases intelligence and does all kinds of benefits for the brain.
And how long it should be done?
This
should be optimal time, right?
Yeah.
How long it can be done.
Well, I'd say for, like, you know, half a minute to 1 minute type of thing. Yeah. You know, don't really need more than that.
If you keep concentration, because you lose concentration, you lose balance.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's it.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I suppose. Again, if once you get, once you're easy at it, I mean, like, you know, you don't have to, there's so many things we do without concentrating, actually, right? We're doing, you know. So when, if you practice that set enough, you'll do it without even thinking about it, right? Just with practice, right? It becomes just natural and automatic. So they talk more about, Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. Again, lots more details on how it, physiology, sympathetic flow, parasympathetic flow, you know, lots of discussion. Again, the main practice here is, Nadi Shodhana, right? Because one nostril is connected to Ida, the other one is Pingala. And by balancing the flow in both nostrils, you can awaken to Sushumna, right? So that's why Nadi Shodhana is very important. Then they give the practices for the Anahata Chakra, which we're going to be doing this month. And then asanas, again, now the second part of the headstand is given. Where you actually go from that position I showed you already and you straighten your feet completely, right? So I'll just demonstrate that. Okay. Right, so now I'll go all the way up, right? Straighten my legs completely. And then I'll fall from that as well. I'll do a somersault out of that as well, just so you can see. And even from that kind of height, you can easily come out of it. So again, you go up nice, slow, with lots of control. And you gradually straighten your legs all the way up. And again, you could fall from this position as well without hurting yourself, right? Just like that, right? I'll show you the correct way to come out of it. That's actually not the correct way. That's if you're falling, right? You can do that. But I'll go in again, and I'll show you the correct way to, after you've done it for, let's say, you've held it for the position for about a minute, you want to come out of it very slowly, actually, right? Because you would have a lot of blood in your brain, and you don't want to do anything sudden at that point. All right. So you go up, same as before. Now you hold the final pose for, like I said, about 30 seconds or a minute. And then you come up the same way you went into it. Just slowly bend your legs, maintaining balance all the way through. And let you come down. So what they say is you should keep your head on the ground for some time, maybe like 10 or 15 seconds, you know. Take a few breaths. And then bring your head up slowly. Again, maybe stay on your knees for another 5 or 10 seconds. And let the blood slowly drain back into your body. And then the final thing they say to do is actually to just stand up for, another maybe 30 seconds or so. You know, just let the blood drain fully. Actually, am I off camera?
Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. You zoomed it for the headstand to see my feet, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, good. And sometimes they also say to just do a stretch even, right? So, like, you know, just stretch up a bit. On your toes even. Right. And then relax. And that's the complete headstand. Okay. So actually I'll fix my mat. Go back to the other position now. Yeah, so the rest of the class I'll be like this, so you can just zoom in. Any other questions about headstand?
Only breakfast.
Yeah. Again, if you do all the asanas, this kind of comes naturally, right? Like if you do practice shoulder stand, you know, and all of the other, like Surya Namaskar and all the other practices, this will be easy, right? So after that, pranayam. So this month we do the final pranayam practice, actually, right? So first of all, at the end of the beginning practices, we achieve the final breathing ratio, which is 1-8-6-2, right? Inhale 1, hold for 8, exhale 6, hold out for 2, right? Then inhale again a 1, 8 again, 6 and 2, right? Left nostril, then right nostril, then right nostril, then left nostril. In the advanced class, we started adding the locks, right? So in month 1 and month 2, we added Jaladhara Bandh, the neck lock, right? So after inhalation, you hold it, and after exhalation, you also hold it again.
What's the benefit of locking it? If you make sure that you are not, no air is escaping and you're holding your breath,
uh-huh.
What's the benefit of making your neck go down and...
That's right. Well, the spiritual energy is also flowing as well, right? Kind of irrespective of the actual breath itself, right?
Oh, that means spiritual energy requires the lock.
That's right.
It
yes.
doesn't require any space to go out.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And the other one is the Mula Bund, right? So in month 3 and month 4, we did Mula Bund. Again, after inhalation, you do Jaladhara Bund and Mula Bund, right? Perineum lock or cervix lock in women, right? Again, after inhalation, after exhalation. Last month, I introduced the Uddiyana Bandh, the abdominal lock. Right. So now we're going to add the abdominal lock after exhalation. So you finish exhaling completely. You hold the breath out for, if you're doing, you know, 4 seconds is your one interval. So for an interval of two, it should be 8 seconds. So for 8 seconds, you hold the breath out. You do Jaladhara Bandh, Uddiyana Bandh, and Mula Bandh, all three of them. All three are together known as Mahabandh, the great lock, right?
And you do it every cycle?
Every cycle, yes. Yeah. So every cycle, you do all three locks. All right? So again, you can watch. I'll do like, you know, one round for demonstration purposes. I'll take my, so you can see what it looks like. Take my shirt off. Again, you do it in Siddhasana, right? So, Siddhasana. Then I'll, So what I'll do is I'll just do one round normal, and then I'll do one round with the locks, right? So inhale. Okay.
And the locks were done like when you inhale, you are doing all the locks, or when you exhale as well? I thought you did locks when.
No. It's during the breath retention only, right?
Only the breath retention.
Yeah. So you can give it a try. Right? I'll do it for like another 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Can I finish the last round? Okay. So once again, a japa japa is discussed, which we're going to get to now. So that's it for lessons 21 and 22. Now I'll switch to the other book. So the Anahata Chakra. So this is the heart chakra. It's located in the center of the chest, right here. And this is when spiritual practice starts to get interesting. So so most people are familiar with the attributes of the lower chakras, right? You know, looking to suit to satisfy our physical needs, our emotional needs, our desires, our cravings, you know. And then Manapura, you start to do more spiritual pursuits, right? You know, building a life for yourself, having a family, you know, creating things and building things as opposed to just, you know, fulfilling your, you know, desires, right? At Anahata, Anahata is associated mainly with love, right? You start to understand love in Manapura, but then Anahata is where it really becomes, you achieve like almost full knowledge of what love really means, right? And the other aspect of Anahata is what he says, fate versus free will, right? So what that means, so fate is when things happen in your life that you feel is out of your control, right? If you feel that your life is, you know, you're not running your life is running you. that's kind of what fate is, where you're driven by your, what's happening is based on your past karmas, your samskaras, your vasanas. Those things that are kind of, that are the baggage you're carrying with you, right? Everything is kind of like, that happens in your life as a result of that, right? Free will is actually where you actually have full control, right? So again, they have a good example. Which I'll just tell you the story. Like, so you become the master of situations in life, right? So yeah, so key thing. The next section is called wish fulfillment, right? So many things that happen in life we kind of attribute to being, you know, oh, that was a coincidence, that was an interesting coincidence, or, well, that was a lucky break, or things like that, right? But actually, in reality, there is no such thing as luck or coincidence, right? We're actually very much in control. It's either fate, something happens either because of fate or because of free will, right? And what free will is actually is just something that you thought or you wished for and you just made it happen. Right, that's actually what free will is, right? And he says here, right? So at the root of Anahata, there's a wish-fulfilling tree known as a Kalpataru, right? Or a Kalpavriksha. When this tree starts to fructify, whatever you think or wish comes true, right? So again, you know, ordinarily you wish for many things and most of it doesn't happen, right? But once this starts to awaken, right, whatever you think will actually start to happen quite readily. So there's a nice little story, you know, a parable basically that people tell associated with how this works, right? And also it's a bit of a warning as well as to, sometimes you necessarily maybe you don't want everything you wish for. It gives a story of a traveler, you know. Again, it's in the olden times, you know, there's no technology or nothing, right? Just walking between two villages type of thing through the forest essentially. On some pathway. You know, so the traveler's walking along, and you know, at some point, he, you know, the sun is hot. He starts to feel thirsty. You know, he says, "Oh, boy, it'd be nice. I didn't pack anything with me. You know, I wish I had some water." You know, and then sure enough, soon he hears a you know, the babbling of a stream. And he says, "Oh, where's that coming from?" He goes, "He's oh, a beautiful stream of fresh water." You know, he quickly takes some drink from the stream. "Oh, that was great. What luck! What coincidence!" So he continues on his journey a bit more, and then he says, "You know, I'm starting to feel a little bit hungry, right?" And then he suddenly starts to smell something nice, right? And he follows the smell, and he comes across you know, an orchard full of like fruit and berries and bushes and stuff. And he starts picking the fruit and eating, you know, picking the berries and eating them. And he fills himself up, right? And he says, "Wow, that was fortunate." Then he continues on in his journey, right, some more, and sure enough, he's like, "Boy, now I'm getting a bit tired, right? I wish I had a place I could lie down, you know." And then he looks over there and he sees, "Oh, between two trees, someone has tied a hammock. Oh, that looks so nice." He goes and he lies down and takes a rest, right? Again, you know, he thinks it's just good luck or coincidence, right? But actually, he's actually awakened, you know, the powers, the wish-fulfilling ability of Anahata, right? And there is also, you know, a negative aspect of that too, right? So he sleeps, he has a beautiful sleep. He plans to sleep only for like 1 or 2 hours and then continue his journey, but in fact he sleeps for like 6-7 hours. He wakes up and it's pitch dark, middle of the night, right? And he becomes a little bit afraid. "Oh, wow, I'm like in the middle of nowhere and it's like pitch dark, you know? I hope there's no, you know, man-eating tigers around here." Sure enough, he hears the growl of a tiger, right? And then he becomes very afraid. "Oh no, I'm gonna get eaten by a tiger or something now." And sure enough, as he gets more afraid, the tiger senses that immediately and gets very attracted, thinking, "Oh, I have a nice meal waiting for me."
And so the tiger is also weak in its chakra.
No, the tiger is nature, right? The tiger has no free will. The tiger is 100% under the control of God, right? Okay? The tiger is responding to your thoughts. Okay. So he thinks his fear, he has a thought of fear, he has a thought, "I'm going to get eaten by a tiger." The tiger thinks, "I'm going to go eat him." Because of that, right? You're the one causing it. The tiger's not doing anything. The tiger's just responding to you only, right? You know, so again, if you have thoughts of love, if you have thoughts of pure love for the tiger may come purring, kneel at your feet, want to be patted by you, right? Okay? Again, Anastasia, read Anastasia, right? She explains all of this, right? Or actually, have you ever seen the movie Avatar, right? There's a scene in that too where he's trapped on the planet, right? He thinks all the creatures are wild and ferocious, right? But sure enough, they're coming to attack him and kill him, right? But as soon as you know, he meets the girl and she changes his thinking about that, no, you know, you don't need to think about the forest that way. It's actually a very loving and beautiful place, and sure enough, it transforms instantly into this gorgeous, beautiful place, right? So the thing is, though, the other thing too is like, if you have been doing the practices every month, right? So this is the fifth month now, right? So if you've been doing 4 months, you know, 1 hour a day of practice, as I've been describing, right? 7 days a week, you would have actually eliminated all of those fears and doubts, right? You would have killed it. They exist in the lower chakras. Muladhara, you know, Swadhisthana, Manipura, right? That's where all the negative thoughts are, right? By the time you get to Anahata, you're actually thinking pretty positive all the time, right? So usually it shouldn't be a worry, right? Again, you'll know, and plus, it's a very gradual process, right? To start off with, just start to realize that there's no luck, there's no coincidence, right? Everything, you're in control of everything, right? And again, he says, he gives a lot of other things he talks about, right? So another good thing people think about too, right, is, you have like a few, you know, some palpitations in your heart, and you immediately start think, you know, that, "Oh, I'm getting angina pectoris," right? Or I'm getting like, you have like a pain in your, you know, adenus. "Oh no, I got appendicitis now," or something, right? I mean, you just make these things happen to yourself, right? It's all nothing, right? Nothing to worry about at all, right? You have to have that doubt, right? Stuff like he says, "Oh, I think that guy doesn't like me." And sure enough, you just had that thought, and of course he's not going to like you, right?
Some people have got some negative thing. If you think that, "Oh, something will not go right," yeah, it goes right. That means they feel that, yeah, by thinking negative, they're getting positive. Uh-huh. Why is that?
Uh-huh. Well, again, it's because of fate then, right?
Yeah, basically they're thinking, oh, it will be negative, then it happens positive.
Yes.
And if they think, oh, this today will be a great day, and then it happens the other way.
Yeah.
And the psychology is negative, and to think negative, it will happen positive.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Is that the free will thinking?
No, that's actually fate, right?
Fate, negative fate.
That means that if you think something, the opposite happens.
Yeah.
That means it was because of fate. Your will had no influence on it, right?
Okay.
You tried to use your will. Your will was very weak. You haven't awakened on the hatha, right? It has no effect.
But it is like having negative is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But
do
you
That's
think
right.
if I think positive will happen, then I don't do well.
Mm.
And if I think negative, I have to be careful with that guy, and then things happen positively.
Mm.
It's just like, it's a psychology of some people. I know somebody who thinks that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if I be very confident, then I will do bad. If I will be very cautious and think I will not do good, then I do well.
Again, it gets very into a lot of subtleties, right? He may be thinking, right? So again, he gives that example as well, right? So you can say on one hand, you know, I am well, I am well, I am well, right? But inside, your deep emotion, you said, I'm sick, I'm sick, I'm sick, right? It's coming from your deep emotion, but on the surface, you're saying, I'm well, I'm well, I'm well, right? So on the surface, he may be saying, you know, it's going to go wrong, I better be careful, but inside he's saying, I'm being careful, and it's going to go right.
Right, yeah.
Okay?
Only then, yeah, exactly.
It's what's inside that rules, right? What you say on the surface is actually no effect, but what's actually deep, what's your deep emotional feeling
what
about that
thing?
That's what's going to happen, right? Right? So you have to be careful about that as well, right? It's what's your deep emotions are about that specific thing, that's what's going to happen. Right, so whatever you say is just whatever you say, right? It doesn't have much impact. It's what you feel that really has the power, right?
You don't have as much control over your emotion, over your feeling. You can convince yourself of things that your inside
nature. You'll see. So, for example, I used to have all kind of... I mean, I've seen in myself, I've seen in other people completely transform their emotions, right? Completely transform their emotions. Right? I mean, my emotions, what they are today, are completely, they bear no resemblance to what they were, you know, 10 years ago, right? I mean, for 10, 20 years, I used to get frustrated all the time, I used to be like unhappy all the time, I used to be depressed all the time, I used to be think negative thoughts all the time, right? And, you know, again, when you go through this process, those things live in your chakras only, right? All those negative emotions, they live in your chakras. Through these practices, you can eliminate those emotions at their source. And it will never manifest. Even it's not suppressing your emotions, eh? People think that you're just suppressing your emotions. You're not. You eliminate them completely, completely from your system, entirely. They cease to exist. Okay, they absolutely cease to exist, and it's an amazing thing when it happens. You know, you suffer for, you know, you have frustrations and you think it's normal. Then you have frustrations and you wonder, why do I have frustrations? Why am I feeling frustrated, right? Is there anything I can do to eliminate these frustrations? You know they're wrong, then you suppress them, right? You say, okay, this thing is happening. I'm feeling frustrated, but I'm gonna try to, you know, not express frustration. I will feel it, but I won't express it, right? Then, you know, 5 years goes by and you're saying, you know, I'm like still feeling it. Why do I still feel it? I'm suppressing, you know, I'm kind of like not expressing it, but I still feel it. Why do I feel that frustration? But then you do these practices and even that, the feeling is gone completely. It just is gone completely. You think to yourself, you know, the same situation, right, that always caused you frustration in the past, right? You suddenly realize, you know, I don't have to suppress anything, you know? I don't feel that frustration at all. In fact, I see the beauty of what's happening, you know? It's a whole, your whole perspective on the world changes, your whole perspective of other people, of situations, everything, it just changes completely with these practices, right? The thing is, you have to be serious about the practices, though. Like I said, you have to devote your 1 hour a day, 7 days a week. It's only one, again, 24 hours in a day. Devote 1 hour, only 1 hour per day. That's all it takes, right? So again, you need the discipline to do that, right? So again, that takes some self-discipline, but if you do that, the results are just unbelievable, right? So I guess the other key thing, again, he talks about that, developing a new way of thinking, right? You know, if you meet a murderer, somebody you know is a murderer, right? Still know that there is good inside them, that they're a good person, that you're meeting this person. I mean, the way I view it, if I meet someone who's a murderer, I know, why am I meeting this person? Because I'm going to bring out the good in him. That's why this event is happening, right? Always think positive, right? You know, not that I'm meeting a murderer. Oh no, he's going to kill me, right? You know, so. Actually, the other point too is love without expectation, right? So, again, this is at the highest level. So, there's two things that bother me, the concept that people have of love, right? One is, you know, I guess there's an old saying actually, you know, you give a man a fish, you feed him for one day, you teach a man to fish, you feed him for the rest of his life, right? So the thing is, people believe, you know, in giving charity, right? But what you do when you give charity to someone, like give a man a fish, right? You create a dependency. You actually you make them weaker, right? They become dependent on what you've given them. They're no longer independent, self-sufficient, right? They depend on you now and they become weaker. So it's actually a very unloving thing to do, to give someone something for free like that, right? It's actually very unloving. The loving thing to do is actually teach them how to fish, right? Make them independent, make them self-sufficient, empower them to have control of their life, right? That is when you do something for the other person, truly do something for the other person, right? The other one too is, again, you know, someone asks you for something, you know, the loving thing to do is, again, people assume that I should do what they ask me to do, right? That's the loving thing to do. But again, not necessarily, right? You shouldn't, you know, become someone else's slave, essentially. You end up in that trap. They then expect, right? You know, I asked this person to do this for me and he just did it. That was great. And then you come to like, well, I'll always ask him to do that, you know, and maybe I'll ask him to do something else and to do this as well, right? And again, you have to teach people to do things for themselves, right? That is the loving thing to do, right? Make people, empower them to do everything, whatever they want, to achieve whatever they want, to get whatever they want on their, with their own ability, right? Not depending on you, right? That's what these practices are all about, right? That's what I'm trying to do. And again, you should do that in every aspect of your life, right? It's all about teaching others to help them empower themselves, right? That is what true love is all about, right? Again, Anastasia, right? Again, Anastasia, she explains love better than anyone else I've ever read, right? And again, love overcomes ego. Again, you realize that by helping other people, you actually, you know, you make the whole world better and you help yourself as well. There's no better way to help yourself than by helping others, in fact, right? Whereas ego is more about helping yourself at the expense of others. When in fact, you actually hurt yourself. So the other thing too to know about when you awaken anahata is that there may be frequent pain in the chest or irregular functioning of the heart. Right, so again, I didn't know this at the time, but yes, I experienced actually very intense, extreme pain right in the center of my chest, right, when I was doing these practices. So be aware of that. Actually, I received an email the other day from someone else telling me that they had a similar experience. And when I read it here too, it must be like a fairly common experience actually, you know, a frequent pain in the chest while the chakra is awakening. Right, the other chakras don't do this. The other chakras are just fine. There'll be a very, you know, tingling or very some kind of other sensation. But anahata, for whatever reason, pain comes first. So just be aware of that. And know this, again, nothing to worry about. Perfectly normal, natural, part of the process, right? And you'll feel healthy, right? It says too, you won't feel sick, you'll feel healthy actually. You'll have lots of energy and you'll feel good. So now the actual practices. So again, they're very similar to what we've been doing all along. The first practice is just to get familiar with the location. So again, it's here. The shastrum is on the center of the chest, right? And the chakra is on the back. So again, you look in a mirror. Again, like I said before, you just get a mirror, put your finger here, you look in the mirror, and then you line up where to press on your back to where the same spot is, right? Okay. And then so you just press, right? So again, 1 minute. You press for 1 minute as hard as you can. You close your eyes. You concentrate on that. Right, so do your back first, right? Usually I do the back first. Press there for 1 minute. So you can develop some kind of sensation there. And then take your hand away and then just concentrate for a minute on that spot. Okay. And the same thing, then you repeat. After you've done maybe 2-3 minutes on the back, then do it from the front. Same thing. So you just press for 1 minute. And then you take it away and then continue to concentrate on that spot. You know, feel the pressure at that spot. Okay, and again about 2 minutes. So press for 1 minute, concentrate for 2 minutes, press in the front for 1 minute, concentrate again for 2 minutes.
That's where the there's a little bay. There's a little bit of a the breastplate, you know, it forms a V shape.
Yeah, so just right
where it meets the ribs come and
right there.
Yeah.
And just above that there is a
bone,
right?
Just above that, yeah.
Yeah. So not too low, not too low, right? It's right, so just right here, okay?
Yeah, the tip of that bone.
Yeah, okay. So the next one is with the breathing now, right? So again, you inhale through this point. Actually, when I was reviewing the video for last month, I didn't quite explain. So when you do with the navel, right? You imagine, when you inhale, you imagine the air is coming in through the navel. You imagine it going all the way through to the spine, right? To the chakra on the spine. When you exhale, it comes from the chakra on the spine out through the navel, right? So when you exhale, inhale in, all the way to the back of the spine, and then exhale from the back of the spine out through the navel. This one is the same thing, right? So when you inhale, so again, so you do more abdominal breathing when you're doing this practice, right? So you focus more on the diaphragm going out and the stomach pushing out, right, when you're breathing. When you do this one, you do more chest breathing, right? So expand the chest. So when you inhale, imagine air is flowing in through the shastram on the chest, going through your chest to the back of the spine, you know, and then when you exhale, you collapse your chest, and at the same time imagine a stream of breath is coming from the chakra on the spine out through the shastram on the chest, right? So just try that from few seconds. So I'm going to do that practice for about 5 minutes. So the first one about 5 minutes, this one for about 5 minutes. The next one is Brahmari Pranayam, the humming bee breath, right? So this one is just, so if you just hum, right? It's a very soft humming. Right? And what you do is...
I do breathing, you're not doing any breathing. During retention, you're doing humming.
No, you inhale fully.
Inhale fully.
And you exhale very slowly. And while you exhale, you do the humming.
Okay.
Like exhale through your nose very slowly with the humming.
Is that the same sound as at the end of Aum?
Yes. Yeah. That same sound is used in many things. We'll do actually, Japa Japa uses the same sound as well, right? And what you do to emphasize it actually is you put your fingers in your ears, right? So when you put your fingers in your ears, the humming becomes very loud inside your head, right? So you can try that,
yeah.
Right? Right? It becomes very loud in your head, right? Yeah. So that's so you just do that again for about 5 minutes, right?
And humming, like when you breathe out, breathe out as slowly as you do it regularly and then do humming, or do you do little slower than what you do generally?
Well, whatever, however breathing, whatever breathing is required to achieve the very slow humming noise, right? So very slow exhalation to hum, right? Because while you, when you, to produce the humming, you have to exhale some breath, right? Oh, is my camera can't be done yet. It's got 2 hours of film, should have.
It's end.
Huh?
It's end. It's full, I think.
Did I forget to delete the video? Oh, I might have forgotten to delete the video.
You want to delete the original one?
Yeah, I'll delete the other video. I've already transferred it to the internet and everything, so I don't need the original video. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, this is last week, eh?
Yeah, May 15.
This is stuff. Oops. Does this have to do it? No, I just place it now.
It is.
This takes me back and forth. How do I get them in? Oh, here. This one? Okay, here we go. That's it.
Delete, yeah. One thing. Yeah, yes. Yeah, it deletes. Deletes completely.
Okay, yeah, that's 10 days.
Yeah, you do that. I mean,
Okay. Seal that. Okay, so. Okay, there we go. Let me just check that it looks okay. So that's pretty much the humming bee breath, Brahmari. Again, you do that for about 5 minutes, right? So the next one is Ajapa Japa, right? This is what was this book talks a lot about, right? It's a fairly simple practice. You focus on the breathing, and the mantra is So Hum. You know, if you heard that mantra before?
So hum,
yeah. Again, basically, the sound of inhalation is so, and the sound of exhalation is hum. Again, it's mostly the O sound, right? So, when you inhale, so you kind of hear it. You imagine so when you inhale, and when you exhale, you imagine hum, again the humming, the same humming. Hum, when you exhale. Okay? So again, you just try to coordinate that that mantra with the breathing. Right? So you're breathing normally through your nose. Right? You just imagine so hum. Hmm? Okay, now you bring your concentration to, so there's a psychic passageway that comes through the front of your body, right? So Ajapa Japa, you move the energy from your, again, we did this last month a bit, moving in this area, right? For awakening Manapura, right? We're bringing the energy up and meeting it at Manapura. This time we're going to take the energy up between the Adam's Apple, the Vishuddhi Chakra, and through Anahata and to the navel of Manapura. So up when we inhale, let me just make sure you got the direction right. Okay, with when you inhale, the breath goes up from the navel to the throat, right? So this is as I expected. When you inhale, imagine the breath going up. When you exhale, it goes down. Right? So again, those are just basically, then you just do the rounds, right? So do at least like 11 breaths. So inhale once, exhale, one round. You know, inhale again, exhale two. So do at least 11, you can do up 21 again, you know. I'd say do this one for about 10 minutes, right? This is the main practice. He also says in the beginning, right, that Ajapa Japa is the most important practice for awakening Anahata, right? So you should spend about 10 minutes doing this one. Again, probably about 21 breaths. You know, it'll take you about 10 minutes. And again, you synchronize the mantra. So from the navel, you so so and imagine the breath is a very fine, you know.
It's a blot on the tip of the.
It's a fine sliver that's traveling here. A fine sliver of energy, basically, that's traveling here, up and traveling down. Just along the front of your body. You imagine actually if there's something, you know, actually traveling, you know, as you breathe in, and it's traveling up, and then it's traveling back down again when you exhale.
So it's not along the back.
Hmm?
It's not along the.
No, this is along the front of the body. Along the surface of the body, along the front and the surface of the body. Right?
Yeah. Another thing is that. So do you say, or you just
mentally. Just mentally, yeah. So. I mean, I was doing it loud just so you can hear what it sounds like, but that's what you just imagine that in your mind, right? When you inhale and exhale. And the final practice is it's called the heart space meditation. So again, you focus on your breathing. And this one, what you do eventually is so just again, I think this one is, so for me, the space is a slightly below, right, the actual chakra. There's a space that kind of opens up when you breathe. Like in your chest, just a little bit lower than the chakra, in fact, actually, right? Inside your body. It's the space the diaphragm moves in, right? So again, it's where your diaphragm is down lower, right? So when you exhale, your diaphragm goes up. When you inhale, it comes down. So it's down, we're closer to the diaphragm, this spot, right? This area. Mm-hmm. And you kind of imagine when you inhale, it expands. When you exhale, it contracts. And you keep your concentration in that spot. And again, do that for about 5 minutes. And he says, and what he says here, that you'll eventually have a psychic experience, right? Some kind of, you'll have a vision, right? He says what'll naturally appear is a lake and a blue lotus, right? So personally, I haven't experienced this myself. Again, I spent most of my time doing the Japa Japa because I was actually following this book. So I didn't spend much time doing this particular meditation, but like I said, I did awaken the chakra with the pain, and then it does transform. The pain actually disappears after a while. You get a tingling feeling is what I experienced, right? I didn't go to the point where I actually had any kind of vision as such, right? But he says if you meditate on this space, just where the diaphragm moves inside yourself, you'll get a vision of a lake with a blue lotus eventually. Anyways, you can let me know if you experience that.
And that experience will happen every time you do it, or it will happen only once?
Who knows, right?
Yeah. But the book says anything about it, or you will experience after it is awakened?
Well,
or
no,
after
exactly.
Awakened?
You have to practice for some time, right?
Yeah.
Like basically, perhaps if you do it for a month, right? You're supposed to do these practices for a month. So if you do this practice every day for a month, let's see how much time he says to do this one for. Yeah, he doesn't really, he doesn't say how much time really, but it's a fairly lengthy description, right? So I'm guessing probably at least 10 minutes as well. He'd expect you to do this for 10 minutes every day. And at the end of 30 days, you might have an experience of a lake and a lotus, right? He says to, again, after you have that experience, you have to still come out of it somehow, right? So he says what you just do is bring your awareness back to, instead of focusing awareness on here, bring it back up to the breath flowing in the throat area, right? Actually, here he says, practice for 5 or 10 minutes, right? And then he says, chant Om 3 times when you're done. Do this. Om, and then 1, and then 2, and then 3, and then you're done. Right? Open your eyes and you're finished.
So it's all in your mind.
You don't say anything. Just internally, you just mentally repeat. Yeah.
Saying hum is easy, like you can make noise. While I was thinking, you need to open your mouth to say so.
No, not really.
No, if you're doing mentally, then it's okay.
Yeah.
Saying so, you do open your mouth. If you're not doing it mentally, hum, you can.
Yeah.
Don't have to open the mouth, but still noise in the.
Yeah, it's a humming. It's a humming that you do very easy. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Huh? That's it for the Anahata Chakra. Any questions? Okay, so I'll see you next month.
Yes.
Okay. And I have to figure out how to splice my two videos together now.
Yeah, I think